for so many people, it would be a quantum leap to their advantage to recognize somehow that what they are believing in, saying and doing in these days is just philosophy. It's just philosophy. And I really want to help anyone that I can to articulate what's on my mind today, because this is apologetically so important. We live in a day where scientism is the philosophy, the dominating philosophy in many people's lives. Scientism, I'll define it as the idea that they get their ideas from science, when it's really just philosophy making use of scientific ideas to benefit itself. That's the idea of scientism. That we live in a day, and it's the infancy stages of technology on Earth. Now, ever since man learned to harness the power of fire, the ability to take fire and to contain an explosive force and utilize that for power, that has led to electricity, which has led to every bit of the technology that fascinates us, such as what I'm recording on right now in my car. We live in the infancy stages of that development. And it really is very, very young in history and the ability to do what we're doing today. So who knows where we'll go with it tomorrow. But we live in a day where there's so much stuff. I live in the United States. I have so much stuff. I'm so wealthy. I'm surrounded by technology. I'm surrounded by just material wealth as a result of the development of tech, that I am a different human. And you know, I got to tell you, I think so many Christians these days overreact to certain ideas like digital currency. I will never do that because that means I got the mark of the beast or something. Technology is going to go that way. They're going to get rid of cash, and it's going to go, it already is. I don't even touch my paychecks anymore. I remember when I used to get them physically handed to me. Nobody does that anymore. You go to the bank, put the little thing in the tube, and you know, it sucks the thing up and goes to the tube. Nobody does that anymore. Almost nobody does that anymore. And we talk as if that's some kind of problem, you know, and most of us have iPhones. Who say it? Most of the people that resist all of that are tapping on their iPhone while they're saying it. And it's hilarious. And then you walk by the waiting room at the hospital and you got 15 people sitting in a waiting room and not a single one of them is talking because they all got a gadget in their hands. It has changed us. And in many ways, I was going to say most, for the worst. And that we are social nitwits and we are isolated, pretending we're somebody we're not, you know, 7 out of 10 hours of our lives. So the same people resisting all of this stuff and technology are the ones tapping on their iPhones. And 20 years ago, before the advent of the iPhone, people would have said the same thing about iPhones. Oh, that's the mark of the beast. Okay, just kind of, I just want people to grow up on that a little bit. But we're in a scientific era. I mean, generations have had to be shortened from 40 years down to sometimes a decade or so in how we account because of the change in the psyche of our culture as the result of technological advancement. So this message isn't about technological advancement. It's about the idea of scientism, but they go hand in hand. Many people today, in their utter ignorance to God, they are very indifferent. They are distant from Jesus Christ, separated from God and from all that is good by the evil that is within them, the Bible says. They're alienated from God because of the wickedness that's in them. Scientism has aided us here because people today believe that what they believe is simply based on fact, when in fact it is simply an unprovable philosophy. And the idea of theory, I've heard many atheists, specifically in the area of cosmology, there's not many of them, but cosmology or certain areas of physics I've seen pushing this, that theory is higher than fact. And I somewhat agree with them. I understand why they're saying it. But yet, philosophically, it discovers, it betrays something about the way that we think. But people will say that theory is higher than fact, like the theory of gravity. It's a theory because there's no evidence contrary to it. We take all the individual evidences and they add up to the theory of gravity. But can you prove gravity? Only by the expressions and scientific principles that give way to it. Nobody's ever seen it. Nobody can generate it. You just generate it with mass. You know, objects generate gravity by their mass, and the famous E equals MC squared and the wonderful ideas of these large planetary bodies. Anyway, the theory is higher than fact is an interesting point. And many people have some things good to say in that area. We do this in our lives by thinking all we do is deal with facts these days. And what does that leave out? Ideas of unprovable dogmatic expression. Jesus rose again from the dead on the third day. That is a dogmatic expression that I make very comfortably as a disciple of God's inerrant and infallible word. I can't prove that to you. And not only can I not prove that today in December of 2021, I couldn't prove it the Sunday that he did it to anybody. This is not how it works. Claiming some kind of physical necessity of evidential ruling to prove the resurrection of Jesus is literally like saying, I need you to measure volume, like sound volume, with a tape measure. That's not how that truth and proof comes. It is a spiritual reality. It is true whether one believes it or not, if it happened. And of course, as a Christian, I wouldn't be a Christian if I didn't believe that it did. But dogmatically speaking, it happened, and it's not given that everybody gets to go back to the day and watch it. Because, by the way, even that wouldn't prove it to the recalcitrant heart. So my point is that the idea of fact today leaves out things like spiritual reality in ways that are impossible to make sense of. It's kind of like saying, I need proof that my father loves me beyond all the hugs, the provision he gave me in my life, the good counsel he gave me, the time he spent with me, and all those things. I need proof of love. Okay, the proof is in all the things. That's not enough. We live in a day that pretends, you got to keep keying in on why I use words like that, because they don't actually do it. They can't actually do it, that pretends we have jettisoned philosophy and theology for sure from the market square, from the everyday necessities of life, unlike those Cro-Magnon older folks, because of our advancement in science and technology, etc. Okay? For example, this is one that's very hot in my heart and mind these days. The viability argument in abortion. The viability argument, I admit, is it's just laughable in bad philosophy to me. It makes a hash of wisdom, science, and reason. But before the United States Supreme Court, it has been argued very recently in the Supreme Court hearing about from Mississippi and an abortion ban. Many, like me, are hoping that our Supreme Court, really not the greatest institution, but that they would become a great institution and overturn things like Roe v. Wade and Casey v. I think it was whatever, Casey case, forgive me, that stuff would be overturned. The viability argument states that at a certain week, a baby becomes a person that should be protected. After the second trimester, that a baby becomes endowed with personhood by societal consensus, rather by scientific premise at a certain week. And the only people making that argument are ethical infants. First of all, If you're going to make the argument that viability bestows personhood and claim that that's a balancing of all the necessary interests, which of course would always exclude the life of which we are having this discussion, you are an ethical ignoramus. You don't know ethics. You have no basis for being called a good person if you believe that viability, which is the idea that a baby can survive outside of the womb at a certain week, that's a subjective call, as that is disproven all the time. So that's a, you know, but they're trying to standardize the idea that viability, listen, this is how it was argued before the Supreme Court, scientifically validates life. Rather, everybody knows that life begins at conception. I mean, everybody knows that. There's not a single shred of anything in any way of calling anything wise that could say that you weren't you, speaking of everything that makes you you and your body's composition, from the day a sperm impregnated an egg. From that day, you, 23 of your mom, 23 of your dad, all things being equal, maybe you have an extra one, you became you, uniquely so, on that day. Everybody knows that. I mean, that's just, not only is that biblical wisdom, well, that's proven by every facet of legitimate biological science. There's not a shred. There's no, everybody knows that. You have to suppress that truth in unrighteousness. It doesn't mean that shuts the case. Because of what I'm talking about in this message, it's philosophies that rule and not mere science. It's kind of what I'm getting at. It's not just about science. It's not just about fact. We like to pretend it is. So the viability argument states that if a baby can survive outside of the womb, it's considered, to be protected. Everybody knows life begins at conception. Fetus just means small child. Everybody knows that intuitively. I believe in natural law. And so I could say to even a non-believing doctor, you're an unethical person if you practice abortion. Okay, because naturally, everybody knows murder is wrong. Now, that doesn't mean everybody doesn't murder. It means that everybody knows murder is wrong. Okay, so anyway, viability states what it states, and in our day, we want to pretend that our philosophy, therefore, is rooted in abstract, certain fact. If you can key in on this is what I'm saying, to the advantage of so many people, you will help them move toward a more teachable frame to elucidate that it's philosophy you've got there, not science. And once you combine bad ideas with enough of the appearance of scientific backing, it creates a concoction in our day of a philosophy that is ruling the day in scientism. So my beliefs about sexuality, gender identity, where life is in able to be viewed as to be protected, my views on God, all of it, unlike those Christians or any other religious person that has some kind of epistemological center in an inscripturated text or some other textual idea or traditions or history or whatever, I don't go there. I just go with the facts. Okay? Viability is a joke. This is just an example of what I'm talking about. It is a joke, and it doesn't change a thing. It is completely subjective. And if you ask the baby what they would want regarding any of these issues in their own life, you'll find viability doesn't enter into the room. And so how might you argue for that unborn life if you were a lawyer defending it after its birth and 30 years later as an adult male? What kind of arguments might you make about personal liberties, about life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness, and that the government cannot solve philosophical and religious problems, but it needs to stop murder, okay? What kind of arguments might you make? You'd make them along these lines. I created in the image of God, that my rights don't come from my mother, my rights don't come from my father, my rights don't come from the state. They come from my creator who made me ultimately. You're going to have to go there because that's wisdom. That's reality, right? That's just reality. That's how a person must argue for their life. It's how everybody listening to this would argue if your civil rights were violated in the extinguishing of your very life by an outside force for nothing that you've done criminally. You couldn't make this argument if you did something worthy of death, but if you did not, you would protest along such lines and many more. So viability doesn't solve anything, ever, because you're just taking a person's rights away based on your subjective conditionality. And what it really is that, you know, we all know abortion is a sex problem. We're an idolatrous culture. The Bible calls sexual immorality idolatry. It is an idolatrous lifestyle that has led to the proliferation of sexual activity in many cultures today, where people are not at war with anything in their own lives. They just maybe don't want to go to prison. That's about the extent of it. So they don't do certain things. Anything outside of that that is deemed acceptable, they'll do. So we all know that abortion is a sex problem. And to keep it, you have the feminist argument about equality, women versus men, that you have to be able to have abortions to be a woman. This is the late and not at all great Ruth Bader Ginsburg kind of argument. If you want to see my book on abortion, it's on Biblicia.com. You can go check it out. I talk a lot about the late, great, dead, pagan Ruth Bader Ginsburg and her, you know, crusade to want to go to hell in the culture of death that we've produced. You know, that women's equality is about being able to murder your kid, because a little punk excuse for a man can just walk away from a sexual encounter. If a woman's pregnant, he can be sexually immoral, but the woman doesn't get to just walk away from a sexual encounter and her sexual immorality, because she can get, you know, stuck with a baby for the rest of her life. So equality means I have to be able to slice that baby's throat with the help of a doctor, safe, legal, and rare, of course, but 60 million people have freaking died. Doesn't sound very rare when you consider the fact that statistically, about 1 in 4 women in my culture today, just statistically, I know it's not a perfect comport of the facts here, 1 in 4 women have murdered somebody. 60 million abortions since 1973 in the U.S. Take the U.S. population of 330 million, remove from the tail ends of it, either side those too young or too old to be giving birth, and you end up somewhere with a certain number. I'm going to comfortably estimate it, entirely estimate it, at somewhere around, let's say, 240 million. Do the math. 60 million abortions, minimum records, by the way, of one abortion. If you abort twins, I'm told it's recorded as just one act of murder, aka abortion. 1 in 4 women have led to the unjust death of the most innocent citizens among us, their own children. You don't think that's going to affect a culture. You don't have to be Christian to realize you have a dead culture as a result of such things. When you're wading through blood, you don't have much ethical grounding for anything as a society any longer. But anyway, so abortion clouds the issue entirely, and this isn't just about this subject in scientism. I'm simply using this to illustrate scientism is a wider issue of a whole culture, a crop of people that have been sold on themselves as the center of all things, Protagoras on steroids, man is the measure of all things, and that has led to the dominance of the narcissism of my day, all aided by the technological advancements, which otherwise may be a great blessing, but this carnal part and this evil part of our nature is certainly exemplified with, you know, being able to connect with a million other people celebrating and worshiping themselves as well. Scientism is this dangerous philosophy. It is not science that leads to arguments of viability. It's a philosophy raping scientific premise as if it's objective and standardized and certain. And again, I'm just illustrating viability as an example of scientism. How many people do you know today that stand for abortion? Again, I'd like to think it's nowhere near what the media wants me to believe, or what I just see on TV or something in the news. I'd like to think there's a lot more people than I would ever imagine that actually are ethically opposed to abortion. And I'd be comfortable to say even here that I think that's the case, because everybody knows it's murder. And, you know, if you get them on an honest day over a cup of coffee, they're going to tell you the truth about it. I do believe that. But so many are for it. And where are they able to base such an idea? It certainly isn't in God. If you claim to be a Christian and you are for abortion, you're not a Christian. I'm just going to be honest and right up front with you. It is an evidence of deadness within you that you can call the purest form of evil, a murder of an innocent human being, even as almost virtuous people talk about it, like it's a virtue. I saw a doctor this morning speaking about this as if it's virtuous. He said, I love babies and I'm pro-choice. And he's a homosexual. And I said, I wouldn't let you within 10 feet of my children. Living out rebellion. This is what hate looks like. Living out his rebellion and speaking of the purest evil as if it's virtue. Right? With all smiles. Getting likes on Twitter. Just amazing, right? The scientism of our day is a philosophy. It's a bad one, but it makes use of the disjointedness of reality and technology and utilizes facts to the advantage that what we have in those facts is an indisputable, indissoluble, neutral ground idea that we are no longer operating on philosophical presupposition. We are now operating on fact. Another example would be in evolution. Darwinian evolution, you can't have a godly worldview and believe in macroevolution. Okay, Darwinism is for chumps. It makes zero scientific sense. It is not wisdom, it is not reason, it's not logic, it's not science at all. It's science fiction. People have never seen it. No one listening to this or anywhere on terra firma has ever once witnessed a change in kind of a creature. Ever. It's never been even claimed. Many of the false liars, you know, like Piltdown Man or whatever, or Nebraska Man, or any of these other proven mendacious quote-unquote researchers. The proliferation of education and paper degrees in our day aids the scientism idea that I'm talking about. I won't go there today, but the idea of peer review, as if there aren't peers out there as dumb as me that'll come back with any theory I've got and say I'm good. And if they rise to a level of prominence in any educational institution, suddenly peer review takes on an inspiration quality that aids the scientism I'm speaking about. But going back to evolution, no one has ever seen it. But yet we claim it's fact, right? So I don't deal with theories about the origin of the universe like you Christians do, with a God who makes everything by the word of his power. I deal in fact. No, you don't. You can't show me evolution today. If you could, I'd believe it. Okay? So it's all here. It's like the science of the vaccine that we all know is a political joke. Well, let's follow the science. Fauci says, I am the science. I represent the science. No, you don't. You represent a political abuse of scientific premise to the political end with which you are utilizing it. Folks, this is science. No, excuse me, scientism. Right? You see what I'm saying? Statistics are scientism. We need to demythologize statistical analysis. I'm not saying it's not useful and it's never good, but it is highly suspect and subject to abuse. Listen, and I'm just going to address this briefly as I close because I've got to go. If I have the ability, the money, the positioning in an organization to reach out to, and by the way, I've never been reached out to in one of these polls ever. I don't know where they come from. If you're like me and you hear all these statistics and data analysis thrown out, you go, who are they talking to? Because I've never been asked, hey, we're taking a poll and we want to know how you feel about this subject in the church or this subject in culture. I've never been approached with it. But anyway, I know that they're doing it. Barna and other, you know, Pew Research and Gallup polls and all these things that go on in the culture. I'm not saying there's no use to it. I'm saying we need to demythologize it. Okay? Because we mythologize statistics. If I have the ability to do this, and let's just say there are 200 million quizzable Americans as to what they believe on a certain subject. And let's say I have the ability over 5 weeks to reach out to an amazing 50,000 of them. And then I get that 50,000 answers back on a poll that represents a view that I've articulated that I want them to be able to come down on with an ABC, let's say. Can I really say that regarding the results of that poll, what the other 249 million plus people believe as Americans? The answer is no. It indicates that I've taken a sample, and so long as it is random and diversified, we trust it as some representative population, but we all know, we should know, that that same test run in another section of the same populace of which we speak could return drastically different results. We all know that cities and ideas color people, rural versus urban perhaps, coastal versus inland, something like that, right? South and north, etc. We all know that. So again, I'm not saying it's not any value to it, but we need to stop believing in scientism that a poll actually proves anything. It doesn't. What it proves is that the sample you populated, and again, I've dealt with this in the military. We do something called command climate surveys, and we all know as commanders that if you catch soldiers on a Friday, especially before a three-day weekend, let's say they got Monday off, and you ask them about how the unit's going, they're going to give you a very different answer than on a Monday. And if that week is the busiest where you're all going to the field or something for 3 weeks, you don't ask command climates on that Monday and expect to get the same results that you'd get before block leave on a Friday. Everybody's doing fine on block leave on the Friday before. They aren't doing as well the Monday they come back. Everything colors this. Everything colors it. So we all know that these are things that this, the reason I bring up the statistical idea again is not to say there's no benefit to it, but to say we've mythologized it, and we need to be aware that it doesn't tell you what everybody believes. The only way to know what 250 million people believe is to poll 250 million people. And even then, other factors enter in, but you'd be then able to say what everybody believes. Okay? This is the scientism I'm talking about. And what I want to finish with is just trying to go back to this simple idea that it's philosophy making use of technologies, making use of ideas in a theory kind of idea, uniting them under something, that something being in scientism, the idea that we have jettisoned we have jettisoned speculations of other theories like biblical cosmology, a Christian worldview, a biblical worldview. We don't dabble in that anymore. We've got the facts now. And you need to understand that that leads, it's a dead end. It's a non sequitur. It does not follow. All that they've got, people who'd argue that way, and many do, I know, because I deal with them every day. They think this way. They argue that way. They're starting with and they are ending with a worldview, a philosophy. They're going through some scientific mechanisms and they're coming right back to philosophy. That's it. And if you can help people understand that, if you can articulate this better than me and you can make sense of that, then what you do is you bring people to understand that they have theories like you, Christian, have theories. And you'll go through scientific mechanisms, and you'll come right back to the Christian worldview. They'll go through their presuppositional ideologies from wherever they're formed. They'll go through scientific mechanisms and come right back to their worldview. we'll all wrap our arms around what we experience in our lives and the facts we come across and the studies that have been done and the research that has been done. But we need to understand what the limitations of those things are, what the abilities of those things are to prove and to lead us to conclusions. And if we do this under the auspice, the understanding that all of us are doing with the facts what all of us are doing, then we won't have people claiming scientism in anything other than another religious worldview. It's just another religious worldview. It's another philosophical attempt to explain the big questions, just like any other. And I'm coming to see this more and more plainly in my own life, in the way that people describe what it is they believe. The way they describe what it is they believe more and more clearly today is made evidence to me in arguments like abortion and Darwinism, arguments of cosmology or sexuality, of course, gender identity, right? Where these beliefs come from is a religious worldview. It's not fact. But the people arguing for them argue as if it's a refutable fact, because they've got some philosophical construct of what research and science means to them. And they're misusing it. It's like trying to take a butter knife and cut a steak. It's like taking a ruler and trying to measure sound, or taking a tape measure and trying to measure, the distance to the sun. I mean, it's such a dangerous theoretic idea that doesn't recognize it's in the realm of philosophy and speculation. We're all in that realm. I as a Christian am in the realm of theological speculation on a great many things. That is, I am not God. I take the facts. I take first God's inspired word. I start there. I end there. The Bible is my authority. Okay? But it in the wisdom of Scripture, I understand I can go beyond revelation into reason and logic and wisdom and study and all of the legitimate sciences and make use of them myself. And I'm going to do that in line with a certain worldview, and I declare openly that that worldview is unprovable. I cannot prove it to anybody. If facts could prove anything, everybody'd be a Christian, because the facts are irrefutable in my theory, in my Christian understanding, for a great many reasons that aren't based on you being able to judge them true or false, or me. They just are. That's my presupposition. God is true, period. Doesn't matter if anybody believes in it or not. He's not the tooth fairy who needs people to believe in him or his kingdom goes away. He is who he is. So that's a Christian argument. That's part of my Christian argument. You, if you're listening to this as a scientism adherent, as a dogmatic speaker from your own religion, need to understand. You come from it the same way. You come from your view the same way that I do. My center is the Bible. Your center is who you see in the mirror, perhaps. That's how many people argue today, and I've just tried to illustrate that scientism is just another philosophy, it's just another religion, and the more we think about this, the more clear that'll become to bring us all to a teachable frame of what Jesus has to say on matters of A, B, C, D, E. What does the Bible have to say about these matters? That's where we want to go as Christians. That's where we want to bring people. And this may help us simply to understand in the exchange of ideas some of the dangers in our day that are rather unique with the scientific age in which we live, etc., of scientism, the idea of the false idea of scientism versus science and our misuse and abuse of it. And I hope it's helpful to you today as you consider it. God bless.